Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
And this is podcast number 33 of my liberalism study that I was doing a few years ago. This is a re-recording. I've needed to re-record about 11 of my podcasts that somehow got lost out there in the Twilight Zone. So hopefully these might be an improvement. I'll never know because I can't hear the original ones since they're lost. I don't have accounting for where they might be right now. But I want to move right along. So as you've been listening, I'm taking off from where I did last week. And basically doing a little housekeeping I wanted to do on two points. One of them, in case there were any confusion about some of the terms or concepts that I was describing earlier. And number two, a little bit more about the concept of serendipity that I also mentioned in an earlier podcast or two. So moving, without further ado, as they say, I want to move right along. So in case there may have been any confusion about some of these terms or concepts that we've been discussing in the last few podcasts, such as the imminence of God, not to be confused with the imminent return of Christ, otherwise known as the blessed hope or the rapture of his church, of his bride. That's the any time return of Christ, the imminent return of Christ. So the term imminence of God, I-M-M-A-N-C-E, not to be confused with imminent, I-M-I-N-E-N-E-N-T, I believe is the spelling on that, the two different concepts. And then also a few of the other terms, transcendence, pantheism, and panentheism. These are topics concepts, philosophical or theological and theological concepts that we have been looking at. And so I'd like to unmuddy the waters a bit, if possible, if need be. And so I found an article, which I thought was a good one. And the title of the article is "A Jedi and a Philosopher Walk into a Bar." And the author is a lady named Elaine, who did not give her full name. But I thought it was a good article, and I'll be getting to that in just a minute. And anyway, I think that this article was helpful concerning, again, these terms, immanence, transcendence, panentheism, and pantheism. But before I do that, I want to review a couple of excellent books, or just, a little bit from a couple of excellent books that I have been referencing. One of them is an older book from 1898 by Samuel Andrews, Christianity and Anti-Christianity in Their Final Conflict. And this has been reprinted by the Berean Call. Thank God. It's a fantastic book. And then Ronald Showers wrote What on Earth is God Doing? And that was a little bit more recent, in 1973. And that, too, has been reprinted by the Friends of Israel publishers. So anyway, both excellent books. I recommend them. I don't work for these ministries, but I just found them very helpful and very good books, timely books. Anyway, without further ado, again, I will quote that quote. This is from, concerning immanence, this is from What on Earth is God Doing, page 86. Liberal Protestantism developed a theology that would agree with its basic principles. In its doctrine of God, it stressed the immanence of God so strongly that it practically assumed a unity of God in the world. It erased the clear distinction between the infinite, perfect God and the finite, corrupt world. It stated that God is present in all the processes of nature. This emphasis upon the immanence of God colored almost all the rest of liberal theology. It disposed of belief in miracles and the distinction between the supernatural and the natural. In the doctrine of man, it implied that man has a spark of divinity within him. Thus, there was no fall of man or inherited guilt. Man is essentially good. In the doctrine of the church, it denied the sharp distinction between the church and the world. Thus, it de-emphasized the importance of the organized church. Concerning eschatology, it rejected the concept of eternal punishment, or hell, eternal hell, and stressed the fulfillment of life now rather than the hereafter. With regard to Revelation, the notion that God is in everything led to the conclusion that he can be known in every experience. Furthermore, concerning the doctrine of Christ, it implied that Jesus was only a man, being subject even to error. However, as a man, Jesus raised humanity to its highest level by allowing God to be supremely immanent in him. He was not the kind of redeemer that Paul and the church pictured. Instead, he was the great teacher of ethics who gave the greatest example of how man may allow God to become supremely immanent in him. In the matter of salvation, the idea of immanence ruled out the concept of God entering a person's life in an instantaneous moment of conversion, you know, that is, being born again, ruling out conversion. The liberals concluded that since every person is born with God in him, conversion is simply a matter of educating a child to act like Christ. Finally, in the area of religious authority, liberalism says that because God is immanent in each person, the final court of appeal for faith and practice is the individual's own reason, conscience, and intuition. Nothing is authoritative for an individual unless it is meaningful to him personally. In essence, this means that each person is his own authority and that there are no absolutes of faith and conduct to which all men are responsible. And, of course, I call that spiritual anarchy and lawlessness. And, of course, there's a whole lot of that going on these days. But anyway, I thought that was very, very significant information. And now from the other book, Samuel Andrews' book that I aforementioned the title. This is from page 140 from this excellent book concerning the divine immanence in man. It says, we are told by this school of neo or new Christians that the idea of God as transcendent is yielding to the idea of deity as immanent in his creatures. And we'll talk a little bit more about transcendence again in the article that I told you that I'll be looking at shortly. This divine immanence is the fundamental fact on which this school of neo-Christians builds its theology. And of course, these neo-Christians in 1988 that this man was speaking of are basically, that's another term for liberalism and the liberals of their day, of his day. As transcendence and immanence are philosophical terms, we must note their meaning in philosophy. It was the doctrine of the pantheist, Spinoza, that all that exists, exists in God. He is immanent in the universe and cannot in any act pass out of him, out of himself, or transcend himself. God and the universe are one. All the energy displayed in it is his, and therein consists his immanence. Okay, and then furthermore, if we, and this is page 141, if we may not charge this school of neo-Christians with pantheism, we must ask in what other sense we can understand the divine immanence in nature and man. That's a good question, of course. So now I want to move to that article that I mentioned. A Jedi and a philosopher walk into a bar, and here's some quotes from that article. Immanence. This isn't a misspelling of immanence, the other immanence. That's with two M's. I spelled it wrong, actually, when I mentioned it earlier. And that, of course, refers to the blessed hope, the return of Christ, and the rapture. This isn't a misspelling of immanence, though the two words are related. Imminent means close, by, or about to happen. Imminent refers to the idea that God is always nearby. An immanent God is one that inhabits the world, intervenes in history and human life, and is always with us. The theological system that most often includes immanence is panentheism, and she says two doors down from pantheism. Most versions of traditional theism, including some flavors of paganism, are panentheistic and talk about an immanent God or gods, a deity, which is somehow part of the universe. And now she goes on to mention her thoughts about transcendence. Interesting. She says this idea about God being partly or wholly separate from the universe, human life, and history. That's what transcendence, she believes, refers to. Most traditional theistic systems also include an aspect of transcendence. Deism is one of the only common theistic traditions to view God as entirely transcendent. God recreated the world, wound the clock, so to speak, and then left it to run on his own. God just left us to our own, our own situation here, just forgot all about us and moved on. An indifferent, uncaring, unloving God. That's the concept behind deism. And this seems to be what Showers and Andrews were talking about in the books that I just read from. And now moving on, most versions of traditional theism operate under a combination of immanence and transcendence. God exists outside the universe, but he also moves and acts within it. And, of course, to that I would say, but not biblical Christianity. So there's the difference between the most versions, in her opinion, of traditional theism and biblical Christianity. And, God did not leave us, as in deism, but rather he entered into this world through the person of Jesus Christ, his Son. God the Son came here. And apparently a limited immanence, maybe you might say, but not panentheists. That is a false teaching for sure. So now let me move to another article that is interesting, and this is also from a non-Christian perspective. This is called Biblical Panentheism, which of course it is not biblical, but the author John Zook chose that title for this, and he says, one of the wildest aspects of mystical Christian thought lies in the simple truth that God is everywhere. And if God is in fact everywhere, then God is in all things, and all things are in God. And then he quotes Matthew Fox. He refers to him as a mystical theologian, and I think you could also refer to him as a New Ager, or someone who promotes the new spirituality, which is, of course, not only unbiblical, but anti-biblical and anti-Christ. But I won't give you that quote there. I just wanted you to know that he is referencing Matthew Fox, one of the usual suspects, of course, who's promoting dangerous spiritual beliefs. Theologians call this biblical position panentheism, meaning, literally, all in God. Panentheism is distinguished from pantheism, which maintains that God is all and all is God. Okay, so that's a little introduction to this article, and then I will cut to the chase of what I want to get to in the article, the meat of it here. It's from page 6 in my notes, under the title of Panentheism and Christian Mystical Spirituality. And in my notes I wrote, a better title for the article, in my opinion, would be Unbiblical Panentheism, rather than his title. So he says, most great truths of Christian faith, and perhaps most great truths, period, are expressed as paradox. God is completely one, and yet triune and infinite. Jesus is fully and completely human, but fully divine as well. Panentheism presents another one. God is completely transcendent and yet immanent throughout his creation. Like the mystery, and this, of course, is really, this is why I was quoting Ronald Showers and Samuel Andrews' books to show the danger of this type of thinking and how it surfaced in 1898, how Showers saw it when he wrote his book in 1973, and it never seems to really go away now, does it? These ideas. And then, of course, it's kind of very useful to those who are pursuing what they would refer to as Christian mystical spirituality and what I might call, Catholic mysticism. And anyway, he goes on to say, like the mysteries of Trinity and Incarnation, panentheism is an ancient theological realization. And as I noted in another one of my podcasts, you can see where liberalism takes you, and I showed you that in one of the other podcasts, and I'll make reference a little bit later when I talk about the idea of serendipity, but liberalism can take you a lot of places that you really don't want to be. You may think you want to be there for now, but in the eternal picture, you would find that that's not the place you want to go. Okay, anyway, throughout the centuries, he says, Christian mystics have encountered God as both unapproachable light and the still small voice within, seeing the wild things of God in all things. The Christian meditation method called contemplative prayer or contemplation, practiced by innumerable monks and nuns, and now lay people from the times of the Desert Fathers to the present goes deep within the heart to meet God ever present within, though without limits, words, or images, because he is beyond them. And of course, to that I would say, it is not true Christian meditation, and it is not true Christianity. And again, the roots of it comes out of mystical Catholicism, the Desert Fathers he refers to, and the monks throughout Catholic Church history. And so, you know, I call liberalism by many of the names that they call themselves, you know, emergence, red-letter Christians, progressives, or just plain liberals. And what takes place with these folks, because they've lost trust in God's word to speak to them, they don't have confidence in the word of God to speak to them, they look for some other method that God will speak to them, or at least the God that they have conceived of or invented, that who would speak to them. And so they replace hearing from God in his word with this Catholic mysticism. And you will see more of that as I continue on in this series of the podcast that I have already done, since, once again, I say this is a re-recording. But I get into that further if you stick with the broadcasts that I've done, and I think you'll find these things quite interesting. I know I did. Now, from a true Christian's perspective, and this is one of many apologists that I think are quite good, a man named Matt Slick, and his ministry is Christian Apologetics and Research Ministry, otherwise known as CARM. And in an article, What is Panentheism? He says panentheism, Greek pan, which means all, in, which means I-N, or in, and theos, which means God, is the position that God is greater than the universe, that the universe is in God, that he permeates every part of nature, is part of nature, extends beyond nature, and is also distinct from it. That's a pretty good definition I think he's got there. Panentheism, should not be confused with pantheism, which says God and nature are the same and cannot be distinguished. However, panentheism maintains that God is changing. Panentheists think of God as a finite, changing director of world affairs who works in cooperation with the world in order to achieve greater perfection in his nature. They believe the world is God's body. Panentheism maintains that God has two poles, actuality and potentiality. God's actual existence and nature is changing, but his potential, what he can become, does not change. Panentheism is unbiblical, since it denies God's transcendent nature, says that God is changing, confuses creation with God, denies miracles, and denies the incarnation of Christ along with the atoning sacrifice. And of course, I shared some of that from Arnold Schauer, some of those ideas about where liberalism can take you in Arnold Schauer's book earlier. Now, gotquestions.org also defines or answers the question, what is panentheism? And this is the answer to that question. Related to process theology, panentheism is essentially a combination of theism, God is the supreme being, and pantheism, God is everything. While pantheism says that God and the universe are coextensive, panentheism claims that God is greater than the universe and that the universe is contained within God. Panentheism holds that God is the supreme effect of the universe. God is everything in the universe, but God also is greater than the universe. And there's some repetition here in these definitions or answers, but I just wanted to lay this out. Events and changes in the universe affect and change God as the universe grows and learns. God also increases in knowledge and being. Now, of course, but we know that God is immutable, or unchangeable is what immutable means, and that's one of his attributes, one of his many attributes. And we'll look at some verses to support that in a minute. Panentheism is most definitely not biblical. In fact, it is extreme heresy that impugns the character of God and makes him more like a man. God is present everywhere, Psalm 139:7-8, but God is not everything. God knows everything, whether actual or possible, and these are some of his attributes we're talking about here. Psalm again, 139, 1 through 6. Romans 11, 33 through 35. God does not learn because he already has all knowledge. God is affected by things that occur in the universe, but only in that sin angers him and holiness pleases him. Our actions do not change God or impact his essential being. The Bible presents God, and I'm not going to give you all these verses, but the Bible presents God as holy, sovereign, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, self-existent, eternal, immutable, perfect, and infinite. And these are, of course, the attributes of God. But I want to hunker down here and look at the immutable characteristic of God, this essential quality of God, attribute of God, and look at a few verses quickly. And to finish the article's comments, it says, none of these attributes are compatible with panentheism. God transcends all of his creation and is in no sense limited or changed by events in his creation. Now, let's look from the Word at a few verses here. Psalm 33:11, and this is talking about God's immutability. The counsel of the Lord stands forever. The plans of his heart to all generations, they stand forever. You know, they don't change. Malachi, and this is Malachi, and this is about as clear as you can make it. God can make it for us. Malachi 3:6. For I am the Lord, I do not change. Therefore, you are not consumed, O sons of Jacob. But that verse right there. For I am the Lord, I do not change. I'm unchangeable. I'm immutable. Do not change. And then finally in James, in chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation of shadow of turning. So, you know, God is clearly an immutable, unchangeable God, unlike the concept of panentheism. Now, I would like to now turn to the, again, doing my housekeeping, as I like to call it. I'd like to look at this concept of serendipity that I brought up in an earlier podcast. And I'll go back to an article I got from a New Age magazine. The American Matrix was the title of the article. And I quoted it from it before, earlier podcast or two or so. And I also shared about Paul Tillich in that article, and also in the book The Occult Experience, Magic in the New Age by Neville Drury. As Paul Tillich was about as liberal as you could get, a liberal theologian, and but the idea of serendipity, I just wanted to clarify a little bit. Perhaps it would be helpful to look at a couple things I found interesting as I was preparing for the study a few years ago. So I'll just read a little bit here. You know, Paul Tillich was one of the featured regular seminar leaders in Esalen, a New Age community in Big Sur in Northern California. And it says it was perhaps typical of the serendipity of those days that one evening in 1962, heavy fog on the treacherous coastal highway through Big Sur forced a vacationing Abraham Maslow, he was a famous psychologist, to seek shelter at the nearest residence. Maslow drove down the unmarked driveway through a tangle of shrubs to inquire about accommodation for the night. He had arrived in time for an Esalen study group that was unpacking a case of 20 copies of his latest book. You know, he had no idea where he was. He didn't know anything about Esalen, apparently, and was just looking for lodging for the night because of the fog. And lo and behold, boom, he just, you know, walks right into a bunch of people studying his writings and his book. So I thought very interesting circumstance there. Now, that is an example of serendipity, and I think it's probably very similar to the term synchronicity. You know, the rock group The Police, they had a song about synchronicity. That might have been the title, in fact, of the song. I can't quite recall, but Carl Jung, I believe, came up with the definition and that title, that word, synchronicity. And again, without going into a whole lot of detail about that, I think it's very similar to this idea of serendipity. It's very popular in New Age circles, and its definition is meaningful coincidence, I think, is the short definition that Carl Jung, the psychologist, made for that term that he came up with. Meaningful coincidence. Sort of what I would call, of course, a satanic or demonic counterfeit of the providence of our God. You know, God has his providence, and we see sometimes things take place, and we call it a divine appointment, and we say, wow, man, isn't God, you know, a God of providence? Look how he worked out that amazing miracle. But it was not a coincidence. It was, as we believers in Christ know, that God works out these divine appointments because of his sovereignty, because of his providence. But Satan tries to counterfeit everything God does. And so I think that's what you would call this this experience that people have, this serendipity. And I think that, well, I won't say anything more about that except to move on to the final book that I would like to make note of to you. And this is a book, hold on just a minute, get my notes squared away here. This is a book written by Raymond Moody Jr. Raymond Moody was a man who, while he was at the University of Virginia, a man that I had spoken to who knew him there, said that he often was speaking about, occult, New Age-oriented topics and that type of stuff. And that was basically what he was really into. And then later, he became one of the main speakers or the main promoters of near-death experiences as being true spiritual experiences, as opposed to demonic deceptions or people who were being, who had a chemical problem going on in their brain or from the drugs they were on, because they had experienced a near-death experience. But, of course, Raymond Moody tried to use these people's experiences to prove reincarnation and other unbiblical, demonic, really, doctrines that go against God's truth concerning future realities, eternal realities of heaven and hell, etc. And so Raymond Moody was on the cutting edge for years promoting these experiences, some of which I believe were demonic, some of which, again, could be explained in other ways by people having problems on the operating table with drugs or different things that were going on. But anyway, I want to get into a little bit from this book because he talks a little bit about serendipity here. And this is from page 93. And I will close out our podcast with some comments from this book. The concept of serendipity also is situated somewhere in the shadowlands of semi-paranormal meaning. And of course, paranormal, when you hear that word, I know what I think of, and I think of New Age counterfeit spiritual type experience. Anyway, serendipity is an assumed aptitude for making valuable or desirable discoveries by accident or in the process of looking for something else. Is that type of gift paranormal or not? He goes on. On the plus side, serendipity, like the paranormal, is intrinsically negative. So it's on the plus side, but it's negative. I'm not sure exactly how this man thinks, but he says it's negative in its meaning. Something is found that is not sought for. Most dictionaries note that serendipity is a supposed or assumed talent, just as they do when defining alleged paranormal abilities such as telepathy or precognition. Like the paranormal, the notion of serendipity is deep rooted in popular entertainment. Horace Walpole, a guy who lived many years ago, 1717 through 1797 was when he lived, extracted the concept and the name from an amusing Persian fairy tale about three princes of Serendip, apparently from Sri Lanka. By the dictionary's definition, all of serendipity's discoveries are happily profitable ones. Serendipity is comic in spirit, like most of the paranormal. But you know what I would say to that, or what God would say to that, I believe, is Proverbs 16:25, and another place in Proverbs, he repeats it because it's an important statement that God makes, and that is, there is a way that seems right unto a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. And so many experiences that may bring you comfort or make you believe you're on the right track are actually a way that seems right, but is deadly wrong. Anyway, in Walpole's words, serendipity is a faculty the three princes exemplified for making discoveries by accidents and sagacity of things they were not in the quest of. So serendipity resembles the paranormal in that it also entails a prior concept of knowledge or sagacity. Moving down in the article, there was somewhere in this book, and again, remember, I'm re-recording from over 3 years ago, and it's not always for me to find all of the materials that were used in when I produced the podcast, but I know somewhere in this book, Factor X is mentioned, okay? And so I comment on Factor X as I finish this quote here. During an episode of Serendipity, someone marvels in a new personal revelation as knowledge already possessed suddenly illuminates a perceived chance occurrence. And, of course, my comment about this Factor X that was mentioned earlier in the book, Factor X are actually the demons who are pulling the strings behind the scene, sort of like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, if you remember the story of the Wizard of Oz. And so beware, my friends. This is the name of my podcast, Deception in the Last Days, and there's plenty of it to go around. And so, I just wanted to clarify some ideas, and hopefully I made things maybe a little clearer. But I hope you'll be with us next week as I continue this study of liberalism and as I re-record this information from a few years back. God bless you all. Good night.